On the 21st of January, 19 years ago today, the representatives elected at this general election met in the Mansion House. They ratified the Republic proclaimed in Ireland in Easter week 1916. They appointed a temporary executive and proceeded to take over and to exercise the functions of government in Ireland. For the next 2 years, there were two competing governments, each of which strove to exercise jurisdiction all over Ireland. One was the government elected by the people. The other was the government of the alien invader. One depended on the support of the mass of the people.
The voice of Father Michael O'Flanagan, speaking about the first Dáil Éireann of 1919, in the establishment of which he himself played a vital role. How is this controversial figure in the national movement remembered today, exactly 100 years after his birth?
Unfortunately, not enough of the younger generation, especially now, know about him. I have, in my own way, tried to make his fame known through some writings, but too often nowadays when I talk about Father O'Flanagan, people confuse him with Father Flanagan of Boys Town. But the older generation who remember him well think very well of him, and they're very proud that a man like him did so much in the period during which we were struggling for our independence.
Well, I remember the part he took in the Cong Plunkett election and the speeches he used to make. How he got us organised to form the old IRA.
He was an individualist, but an individualist that gave himself readily to such causes that had very little support in our country at that time, the cause of Republican Spain.
He wasn't a doctrinaire Republican, you know. A lot of people think he was, nor was he a revolutionary. But he believed that a commitment was made in 1918, not 1916 now. And this is really mostly why I say that he wasn't a revolutionary. It was the will of the people in the 1918 election.
I remember him, of course, in Irish public life as a patriot, a priest, and a public speaker. I remember his appearance very, very well. He was a fine, strong man, handsome, with an upright carriage. He conveyed an impression of fearlessness. Well-groomed and without blemish, he was a model of what one would expect an Irish priest to be.
He was a stately man, a great orator, and a very sincere Irishman.
On May Dine, Kermishir, we fair Anna Fracticule, her fad, Vion, August, the Lady Chasin, Sakor August, and Snorodinche, O'Have Kirkin Keenan, Kinadanam, our dear fair.
He was a great man.
A great man. That's the verdict of many of his contemporaries on Michael O'Flanagan, the staunchest priest who ever lived in Ireland, in the words of Cathal Brua. Where did he come from and what was his background? His niece, Mary O'Flanagan of Castlereagh, County Roscommon.
Father Michael was born in Clonfour, about 4 miles west of here, and in the parish of Kilkeven, or Castlereagh, if you like, on the 13th of August, 1876. His parents were farmers, and they were natives of the parish. In fact, natives of the parish for as long as we can possibly trace, and he was a great man for tracing things. They were native speakers, and I remember both my grandparents, when they didn't want us to know what they were talking about, they spoke Irish.
Well, they came from an area which would have been known as a Brach Gaeltacht at one stage, and there would have been a certain amount of Irish. Now, he also came from an area where there was a profusion of Flanagans and O'Flanagans. In fact, all the Flanagans there, they were so numerous that all of them had nicknames. They were never known as Flanagans. He would have been known as Michael Edmund, because his father was Edmund Flanagan, and his brother Pat Edmund. He was Pat Edmund till the day he died. And his mother, of course, was from the same area, a little bit further over than from where he was born, in the village of Clonfour. She was Crawley from Totnoose. And I do know that in that area there were people who were native speakers up to the early part of this century.
Michael O'Callaghan, editor of the Roscommon Herald. How much Irish then had Michael O'Flanagan as a young lad growing up near Castlereagh?
According to himself, not as much as he should have. My grandparents were bringing up their own family, they considered it a disadvantage. And they, according to him and according to the other members of the family, they only spoke Irish when the children weren't there. They spoke English, which they had learned at a hedge school. My grandfather himself actually wasn't able to write any English. He never learned to write English. But Father Michael always said he was a better Latin scholar than he could ever hope to be. Mm. I have here a roll book in which his entrance to the local school in Clonbonnef, and you may be interested to know that local school, the headmaster in that local school at the time was the grandfather of a friend of yours, of Micheál O'Callaghan's of the Roscommon Herald, and that actually is Micheál's grandfather's writing here in front of us now. Entering him in the Dunn School, it was known as the Dunn School, it is out in Clonbonnef, and of course you know who the O'Connor Dunn was. It's still known as the Dunn School.
It's called after the O'Connor Dunn.
The O'Connor Dunn gave the land for the church and the school and the teacher's residence, free grass and for nothing in those days.
From the Dunn School, Michael O'Flanagan went to the Diocesan College in Sligo in 1890. And he did exceptionally well there, particularly in mathematics. He went to Maynooth in 1894 and was ordained priest in Sligo Cathedral in 1900. It was during 4 years he spent as a teacher in his former school in Summerhill that he first showed an interest, which he was to develop later, in social and economic matters.
He was, if you like, a developer first. For instance, of the more recent Irish patriots, shall we say, Fintan Lawlor would have been his model, you know. And the first, if you like, interest that he showed was in rural industries. I suppose that would be around about the time of the Congested Districts Board. Actually, he took five young girls to America, and they went around the cities of America promoting Irish lace. And that was his first visit to America. He was always going to America.
What year was that?
1906, but I'm open to correction on the year. It might be five, it might be seven, but round about that time. His second trip to America was on diocesan business. It was to collect funds for the church in Loch Linn, a very beautiful church that you should see, and for the establishment of the Franciscan Missionaries of Mary convent in Loch Linn, a property that they bought from Lord Dillon.
Father O'Flanagan, on his tours of the United States, showed a good understanding of Irish-American psychology. It's said that he brought with him 32 sods of turf, one from each Irish county, and that the Irish-Americans willingly paid a dollar a time to tread once more on their native sod. To this period also date his active interest in the Irish language and his fundraising efforts for the Gaelic League. Donacho Sulawine, Stuarthóir Oireachtas na Gaeilge.
Co fada siar le nédiag de tauge cuisteag na hán conra, agus an líon chéanna da chuir an cuisteag na hé amach go dí na stát éantaithe é féin agus sin an McCollum a bailiú erigid. Dána dar án stóram go dí míalúna sa nédiag a dóiag nor a hán dar a wale. Da chuir dar sim vaharigid wale hos cion 3,000 púntra a mar higim bí cuiste na tanga. Víocha an tahir á Flanagan is gosúla mohán go minic agus tamla ní dhéag sin an san de chuireg drá meile amach ar ríis go dtí na stát agus bhí chuireg do siúpa ar bun ann Ach ni dorm greven tair o Flanagan ro hasta le sin mar vashe gur kog me kakre dun te dol do fein agus nisa gomar ev kish brabig no kadavigist ach vi einis is kasoola dre fein agus in kristag nocha agus is bug ele a kola has fui kafagas elum ira macho na tuishki le na vinte egin gunra ni se sin bedra ni egin erig tridig nerig a kuldiag.
Father O'Flanagan's association with the official language movement ended with a threatened legal action on his part against the Executive Committee of the Gaelic League, but his support for the language itself lasted until the end of his life. This is an excerpt from a recording he made in 1938.
Ni mask ach mask Gudian law ata nyuhan, ta dinian, dini rogo agus atoju in erin, agus nilan mas castical, ar changa an nashu in fain. Is ashtuch an rode shin. Will ein dena savrain, nach will masiga ar an frank verla. Will ein dena in senyara main, nach will masiga ar an yaramanis. Will ein dena asasana, nach will masiga ar sak verla.
The first indications of the radical anti-establishment Michael O'Flanagan were seen in Cliffany in County Sligo, where he was a curate in 1914. The Congested Districts Board, a government-sponsored body, announced that in order to conserve fuel in wartime, it was reserving for the use of its own tenants the turf banks which had been available to all the people of Cliffany for generations. Father O'Flanagan, after a long and fruitless correspondence with the board, finally, on the 29th of June 1915, addressed his parishioners outside his church after Mass. Patrick McCannon of Cliffany remembers the incident.
There was a large tract of bog about in the vicinity, never entered by man, but kept by British imperialism for some undefined purpose.
But this was the landlord's, actually, wasn't it?
It belonged to the landlord or the Congested District Board, where what they were part and parcel of landlords.
And had they taken it over?
Lazy. What,
had the CDB, the Congested Districts Board, taken it over?
I don't think they had at the time. But Father O'Flanagan recommended that the people go with him to the bog and that he would take it over. And
was this at a sermon or after Mass or what?
It was after Mass. He had a public meeting, and he recommended to the people that as they wanted the bog, he'd be their leader, and he'd bring them to the bog, and that they'd take over the bog, and that he'd cut the first turf himself, and therefore he did. Well, after a while then, the turf was cut by with his cooperation, and the turf was saved, though there were several arrests made. And when the arrest was made, the people got more determined and they said that they wouldn't be intimidated by police or any form of imperialism. So the turf was saved, and the next thing, I think it was the Sunday, though the police and soldiers were keeping it under observation, the turf was brought and stacked opposite an old school up there, which belonged to the landlord, and as there was a new school built, it was there with nobody living in it. And almost directly in front of Cliffany RIC Barrack, which was very, very fairly strong and well fortified at the time. Next, when the stack of turf was built, there was a banner put across on the face of it with the words, beautifully inscribed in Irish, "Our own turf for our own people. Foreigners have no rights here."
The fight for the Turbary rights in Cliffany ended in victory for the people, though the Congested Districts Board did get an injunction restraining the turf cutters, and some of them were fined for their activities. Father O'Flanagan's punishment came in the form of a reprimand from his bishop, Dr. Coyne, and a transfer to another parish. But the people of Cliffany objected vigorously to any transfer.
The next morning then, the people gathered all together, and in every mode of convenience possible was utilised to bring the half parish, or the biggest part of that, into Sligo to interview the bishop. Well, after the discussion and all went on, Father O'Flanagan said he would go quietly, and he asked the people to go quietly, and that as he was a good churchman, and through to the annals of his predecessor in the Catholic Church, he would go quietly. But when the people came home, I don't know, I'll tell you straight out what exactly we heard. When they interviewed the bishop, he listened to them very attentively and had great sympathy for them as far as that went. We don't know whether it was sincere or otherwise, but Father O'Flanagan was not sent back to Cliffany anyway. The next thing that the people did, they held another public meeting, and they said they closed the Cliffany Church, and until Father O'Flanagan would come back into their midst, as he was a patriot, an Irishman, and a good pastor, that they wouldn't let any priest go in and open that church until first they'd get their pastor back. But after a while then, through intercession by different clergymen, they said that they'd open the church again. It was transferred to Krasnay, and the church was reopened with the understanding that the man that had been sent would be a good Irishman and a good patriot, just as he was himself.
But Father O'Flanagan's involvement with politics on a national scale was really only about to begin on his removal to the remote parish of Crossnaw. He was much in demand as a speaker at nationalist gatherings all over the country, and he articulated most forcefully the new Republican Sinn Féin policy at the time of the famous North Roscommon by-election of 1917. He it was who was mainly instrumental in having Count Plunkett selected as the Sinn Féin candidate, and in whipping up enthusiasm among the campaign workers.
And the first thing all of them would admit was that were it not for Father O'Flanagan, they would not have been as much involved as they were, that he inspired them to be active as they were, and he inspired them to do things which they would never have dreamed of doing without his inspiration. And they found him an easy man to work with, a great organiser, and he laid the plans and they carried them out. In fact, when I say carry them out, they literally carried out the voters, because it's known as the election of the snows. It was held during a very bitter storm in February 1917. And at that time, of course, only rated occupiers of property were allowed to vote. So in many cases, these were old people who were living in isolated country houses across the fields and so on. And the young men of the district transported them body and bones, carried them on their backs out to the polling booths. And they did this because they were inspired by Father O'Flanagan to be active for the election of Count Plunkett.
The return of Count Plunkett to Parliament for North Roscommon in 1917 represented a turning point in Irish history. No one was more aware of this than Father O'Flanagan himself.
For months it seemed as if Easter week might be followed by a long period of deep despair. Would the inspiration of the example of the men of Easter week, or the terror caused by their defeat, have the greater effect upon the mind of the country? For 9 long months this question received no clear and convincing answer. In January 1917, an opportunity of solving the doubt occurred at a by-election. A candidate was carefully chosen, whose election would be a clear proof that the hearts of the people of Ireland were with the men of Easter week. This candidate was returned by a great majority, proving thereby that Easter week had succeeded in stimulating the national spirit of the Irish people.
In his own efforts to rouse the national spirit in those years, Michael O'Flanagan used his great oratorical and persuasive powers to good effect. Maura Comerford remembers campaigning with him.
I was among a party of people sent up in the election of 1921, when it was an election in the six counties, and we'd never been speaking at elections before, and we came up, a trainload of us from Dublin. Father Flanagan, in Derry we met him, and he came out and he filled us up full. He was all warmth when he saw that we needed gingering, and he put the spirit in us, and he sent us off on this election duty, and I'm sure we all made magnificent speeches as a result, much better than we would have made without him, I'm sure of that. Well, he was a man of such splendid and unique education. He was a very, very a good scholar in his own line, very, very, very distinguished, and he had the art of talking to people. That was a wonderful asset.
And another asset was his wit. Michael O'Callaghan again.
Some years ago, I received a pamphlet which was the speech of Father O'Flanagan delivered at the Bridge of Finney in about 1916 at a commemoration of Miles the Slasher, or it might have been later than that now, I don't know the exact date. In fact, I think this was the speech which led to his suspension afterwards. And to illustrate whatever point he was making, Father O'Flanagan told the story of a man who had been prosecuted in a magistrate's court for cruelty to a dog. The story was that the man was passing by the house of a neighbour with whom he wasn't on good terms, and the dog came out and attacked him. The man was carrying a hay fork because he was going to make hay, and he warded off the dog with the hay fork, and in the course of it, I think, must have stabbed the dog. So he explained his case in court, and the magistrate was rather sympathetic towards him, but he said to him, wouldn't it have been better had you warded off the dog with the other end of the fork? And the reply was, well, I suppose it would have been better, and I would have done that if the dog had attacked me with his other end.
But O'Flanagan's wit was no asset where his ecclesiastical superiors were concerned. His anti-conscription speeches in 1918 in particular brought his second curacy to an end. 83 years old Mrs. Patrick McDermott remembers his leaving Crossnall.
He was on trial because he was too good a politician, and he was all the time talking for Ireland and freedom of Ireland and talking against England and why she should be here at all, the very same as you're talking today in the North. And the bishop had him transferred. He was afraid, I suppose, there'd be too big a fight in the parish place if it continued. But when he left, the people shut the church doors and locked them. I wouldn't let allow any other priest say mass. And they used to come and collect outside the church and say the rosary. Crowds of them. And that happened for 3 Sundays. And then Father Michael came down and he asked them to open the church, so there was no sense in having it closed. And where was he transferred? He was transferred up to Roscommon after that.
The technical offence for which Father O'Flanagan was deprived of his faculties as a priest was that he had addressed meetings within the boundaries of 3 parishes in Cavan during the East Cavan by-election of June 1918, without first obtaining the permission of the local parish priests. That the parish priests, like the bishop, were in all probability supporters of the parliamentary party and unlikely to have given their consent anyhow was beside the point.
Well, I suppose I have a feeling now that in the light of present-day circumstances that he was victimised. But I suppose the church wasn't as broad-minded then as it is now. And certainly it would be the view of most people now that he transgressed some minor canonical law, and that this was used as an excuse, if you like, to exclude him from church activity because of his strong political views.
And both church and state wished to silence him because to them he was an extremist, Stephen Rinn.
It could have been more to than met the eye. I don't think anybody thought Father Flanagan was terribly extreme. Mm. After all, what was extreme in Sinn Féin times? I mean, we're all extreme. If you committed to Sinn Féin, you were as extreme as could be.
All Sinn Féiners were extremists, yes, of course. To a large number of people, weren't they?
You know the story about the confession, and the priest, the man said to the priest, "I shot a father. What have you done since your last confession? I shot a policeman, father. You didn't come here to talk politics. What else have you done?"
Yes.
Well, that was a story. I'm sure it's not true, but it was the mood. The mood was that you should play policeman, but you didn't. You were none the worse for that.
Father O'Flanagan was not in the business of shooting policemen, but he was now co-vice president with Arthur Griffith of Sinn Féin, and at the very centre of the political movement for independence. The historian Thomas P. O'Neill of University College Galway.
He was associated with the whole political movement, particularly the anti-conscription speech-making and so on, and while he wasn't arrested in 1918, it gave him the chance to be involved with the 1918 election, and he actually read the prayers at the opening of the first Dáil. A story is told, actually, of that he himself and Darrell Figgis are supposed to have been coming out together. Darrell Figgis was rather peeved that he hadn't himself been elected and was complaining to Father Flanagan, and Father Flanagan is supposed to have said to him, "We're like two old hens looking at our chickens hatched out." But in fact, he went on from there. As vice president, his role became a little more important, perhaps, or seemed more significant in December of 1920, after the arrest of Griffith and De Valera being out of the country. The fact that he sent a telegram to Lloyd George and involved himself in December and January of 21, the following year, in negotiations for peace or efforts to make peace, became a very controversial issue. Lots of people in Ireland felt that he had weakened the Irish case because by taking such a step, he had done it without authority, and yet he was a senior man as a vice president of Sinn Féin. And he actually saw Lloyd George in London. He went after Archbishop Clune had made the first steps towards negotiation, and after there was a resolution passed by the Galway County Council, which also was controversial. And all of these indicated to Lloyd George that the whole movement was breaking down, and Lloyd George at that time accepted the advice of his military that they could break the Irish movement within 3 months. And it was felt that Collins was probably right in saying that Father O'Flanagan's intervention at that point did help to strengthen the influence of the military advice on Lloyd George.
The abortive efforts of this self-accredited amateur diplomat was Piers Baisley's description of Father O'Flanagan's peace talks with Lloyd George. We asked Thomas P. O'Neill if this indicated a mistrust of the priest among his Sinn Féin colleagues.
Well, I don't think so. I think, in fact, Father Flanagan was an individual. He wasn't a politician in the normal sense. He wasn't tied by the same views of policy and negotiation and so on as other members of committees and tend to be. In fact, there's a very good story about September, October of 1920, when De Valera was in America. Harry Boland had come back to Ireland, and he persuaded Mrs. De Valera to go out to visit Dev. And he used very strong persuasive measures. He said that Dev was ill and so on. Mrs. De Valera never wanted to travel anywhere, and she detested the time she had to spend in America. But when she arrived, a telegram was sent to De Valera by Harry Boland, who was already in New York as well. The moment she arrived in New York, he sent a telegram. I think De Valera may have been as far away as San Francisco at the time. "Flanagan here." She was Sinead Lanagan. And De Valera's first reaction, "Oh my God, how will I keep him quiet?" She didn't. He thought it was Father Flanagan.
Mm.
But you see, it indicates a certain element of mistrust of the what he might say, even as early as that. And that was before the Lloyd George thing at all.
For several years from 1921 onwards, Father O'Flanagan campaigned for the Irish Republican cause in the United States. But for a man of his individualistic temperament, it was perhaps inevitable that he should break eventually with Sinn Féin also.
In 1927, he didn't resign. He was against the resolution proposed by de Valera in the special Ardesh of March of 1926, which de Valera tried to get the Sinn Féin of that time to accept, that the entry to the Dáil should be a matter of expediency rather than principle, that they could in fact go in if the oath were removed. And Father O'Flanagan was the man who put down the amendment to de Valera's resolution, which won by a very slight majority, but a matter of 2 or 3 votes, as far as I recollect. But he stayed with Sinn Féin when the de Valera and his followers left and set up Fianna Fáil. But there was difficulties in that Sinn Féin after that date, because Art O'Connor, who became the new president, ran into difficulties with Mary McSweeney because of his wish to practice in the courts. He was a lawyer and wished to practice in the courts of the Free State. And this was considered to be against the principles of Sinn Féin, and he had retired from presidency. And I think it's at the same time that Father O'Flanagan left. But then he didn't go to Fianna Fáil.
In the Irish Free State of the late 20s and early 30s, Father O'Flanagan had a very lean time. But when Fianna Fáil came to power in 1932, Éamon de Valera and his Minister for Education, Tomás Oderig, found a way of utilising some of his talents. He was put to work on the John O'Donovan Archaeological Survey and Letters, and on county histories in Irish. Frank Ward, formerly on the staff of the National Library, remembers him at work in a special room there.
It was known as the Large Book Room, and contained outsized, elephant-sized books of various kinds, and it was used to economise the space, which was always a problem, and still is.
He had a special staff there too.
He had, yes. Two ladies, Miss Nelson, who was related to him, and Miss Riddick. They were very charming girls and assiduous workers, and helped him in every possible way, and there seemed to be a great mutual regard and respect between them. They certainly held Father O'Flanagan in very high esteem.
Had he all the material he wanted around him there, or would he consult like yourself?
Very often he had all the implements of the trade for research, that is the typewriter and papers and things of that nature, but very often he had to apply at the counter for books and that kind of thing. We found him indeed quite a pleasant man, with a great economy of words, never wasted very much time, rather bluff type of man in certain ways, but he had a warm, friendly disposition.
7 of the county histories were published, translated from Father O'Flanagan's English by various hands, but the O'Donovan letters never got any further than typescript. Thomas P. O'Neill had this to say about O'Flanagan's work on the histories.
I don't think he had much guidance on them, and they weren't very good. They were quite poor. As a matter of fact, the one particular that strikes me is the Carlow County history, which I know a bit because I'm a native of the county, and for the mid-17th century he has no reference to the whole Cromwellian change in land ownership in the county. He has 3 chapters of general history with only 1 local history reference, as far as I recollect, in the whole thing, in that mid-17th century period. It was based on a very early 19th century county history by Ryan.
He had no real historical training either, had he?
No, he had no historical training, and he was too deeply involved with his political idealism to be a good historian.
But Father O'Flanagan was nothing if not versatile. He had some reputation as an inventor, and his water goggles for undersea use were patented and widely sold in America. They were shown at the 2nd exhibition of Irish Inventions, Models and Aeroplanes, held by the National Agricultural and Industrial Development Association in the Mansion House, Dublin, in 1942. Donacho O'Sullivan, who was associated both with that exhibition and the earlier one, recalls meeting Father O'Flanagan at the 1941 exhibition.
I met the Nina now, Hannigan Starkholm, and Tahir Mihal O'Flanagan, Om Loin, Law Wine, I guess. Because Storm Susla Gaur, a clig, a kind lish, I guess, adult team polish, I guess, Kame Ra, Gorbaden Daur, a clig, Baharifi Storm, a Kame, Egonom Arhishin, or better Guminica Hin, a play lish and Sagacha, Gorevenirid, Olishige, Fuikursi, I guess, a nerd space, you get instant Rodi Vier to Spine. You have me kin to dear Egonoms and Gur Argor now in winter, we. On fein, ach sarav me reglish ik dira and tran honish in visa gum guma kadir nrodi avi diantege agus kurha erfoilige agus in spesha vi lerihige igursi e kurkun keen and fubble mara dirfa.
Well kadir nrodi sha avi diantege.
Well ta kyon wana kum avi an trakta song will trakta go fool shishin on O'Flanagan patent water goggles no on ron sool no speckly snava. Rodi et sinnevi in osad ege tomodori, agus inodine via egubber fuyenishke.
In his later years, Father O'Flanagan devoted himself to his inventions and historical research, speaking only on issues which strongly moved him. One such was the Spanish Civil War, in which his sympathies were very much on the Republican side. Michael O'Riordan of the Communist Party of Ireland remembers him on his own return from Spain in 1938.
There were a group of us, we were the last group back actually. And I remember we arrived at Western Road Station and we marched with a piper ahead of us. There was only roughly six of us, but friends and sympathisers, roughly about 30 people, marched up Pier Street and it began to rain like hell. And we came as far as Abbey Street and there was Father O'Flanagan up on top of a lorry. And he made the speech of welcome back to us, and there wasn't a very big crowd there. But after that, on that same evening, we had a meal with him and with other people who were associated with the sort of Irish Friends of the Spanish Republic. And it was then I got first a sort of chance of discussions and exchange of opinions with him. On the question of the struggle in Spain, he had no doubt whatsoever, because even the very beginning in 1936, he was one of the few who came out very first when the propaganda of the papers, lay and clerical, was at full blast. And he spoke at a meeting in the Engineers Hall here in Dawson Street, a meeting of solidarity with the Spanish Republic.
Father O'Flanagan's attitude to General Franco's regime may not have been the most popular in Ireland, yet it was shortly after this that he had his priestly faculties restored and he was appointed chaplain to three convents in the Dundrum-Sandyford area where he lived in 1939.
It was when Dr. John Charles McQuaid became Archbishop that one of the first things he did was to try and clear up the kind of remaining problem of the Father O'Flanagan's relationship with the church. And I have no evidence whatsoever that De Valera interfered in any way in asking Dr. McQuaid to do this, but it's certain that Dr. McQuaid, as a kindly man, would try to solve this in his own diocese anyway, because he was a priest not from his diocese but living in it. In a kind of difficult situation. And also, I think Dr. McQuaid would have been very aware of De Valera's interest in Father O'Flanagan, because while De Valera and Father O'Flanagan did not agree in politics, they certainly De Valera had a great admiration for Father O'Flanagan, a great regard for him.
Michael O'Flanagan died in Sandyford, County Dublin, in 1942. His name may be less familiar than it should be to the younger generation, but we end in one place where he's still remembered with affection and admiration, in Crossnahl, where in the parish church which he once left under a cloud, a plaque from his American friends pays due tribute to one of the most remarkable figures in recent Irish history.
In memory of Reverend Michael O'Flanagan, curate of Crossnahl Church in 1915 to 1918, born August the 13th, 1876, and he died August the 7th at 1942. His great work as a holy priest of God and his fearless fight for the Irish freedom shall be a lasting monument to his memory. May he rest in peace.